Welcome to the Philia podcast. Philia means daughter. We are the daughters of the women who came before us, and we fight so that our daughters may be free. We are a women-led volunteer organization. Our vision is a world free from patriarchy, where all women and girls are liberated. We seek to contribute to the women's liberation movement by building sisterhood and solidarity among women, locally, nationally, and globally. By amplifying the voices of women, particularly those less often heard or purposefully silenced, and by defending women's human rights. Our podcast seeks to shed light on some of the most pressing issues facing women and girls around the world. Please take from them what you can. In sisterhood and in solidarity, the Philia team.
Hello, my name is Ruth and I'm a Philia volunteer. I'm also coordinating the Hague Mothers Project. The project and this series of podcasts is intended to raise awareness about a piece of legislation, the International Hague Convention, and the injustices which trail in its wake, particularly for mothers and children. Under the Hague Convention on the Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction 1980, to give it its full title, a child is considered abducted if they're removed by one parent without the other parent's consent. The motive is not relevant. Over 100 countries have signed the treaty. The convention was originally intended to deal with a parent taking their child across national borders without the permission of the other parent. It was particularly aimed at fathers. However, in over 70% of cases, the legislation is now being used against mothers, many of whom are fleeing domestic violence and sexual abuse. The cases are brought by the perpetrators of that violence with support from the state. And the outcomes are invariably catastrophic for the abused victims and for their children. In the majority of cases, even where there's clear evidence of violence or criminality by the father, the law insists that the child must be returned. And of course, most mothers return too, in spite of the very real risks to their safety. Their situation is now precarious in the extreme. They face an escalation of violence and abuse from the child's father, and economic hardship and potential homelessness if they try to leave the relationship, or if, as often happens, they're thrown out of the home. Labelled by the courts as a child abductor and kidnapper, mothers are branded a risk to their own children. Should there subsequently be a custody battle, as there often is, this puts them at an overwhelming disadvantage in a custody case they will then have to fight in a foreign court. Even in these circumstances, mothers will invariably try to remain in the foreign country in order to be near their child and to have a hope of seeing them. But at least a quarter of those mothers have no support in the father's country. No family, limited finances, no legal representation, and, depending on the jurisdiction, no visa to remain in the country or to work there. They are left with no choice but to leave their child and go home alone. For many, it will be years before they get to see their child again. Some lose all contact. And the child, who was supposed to be protected by the Hague Convention, lives with the abuser, potentially losing all connection with their maternal family, their culture, heritage, and even with their mother tongue language. The only alternative, and it's a truly desperate one, is to go on the run with your child, a permanent outlaw, like Detroit. Detroit is a victim of The Hague. When we met, online and by chance, she was camping out with her son in the US, living hand to mouth, permanently on the run from The Hague, the courts, and her violent husband. Over many months, she told me her story. The extract you're about to hear was compiled from a series of emails that she sent me, typed onto a phone in a tent in a storm. Sarah, another Philia volunteer, is reading it on her behalf, since the risk to her is too great.
When I was pregnant with Rosie, I was in his country. He'd insisted. He beat me up so badly at 7 months, I went into labor. Alone. I kept thinking it would calm down, it's just tightenings, it's fine. Then one knocked me onto all fours. I crawled past the broken elevator down the stairs, out the gate, into the gutter. It was December and cold. An old man on a bicycle paused and stared. "Help me," I shouted. "I'm having a baby. Right now." He hailed a taxi. Ambulances are loath to take foreigners and are slow. A taxi would be quick. Two local men bundled me into the back seat. The middle-aged taxi driver asked if the at least 80-year-old man was the father. I didn't laugh. No. No, he isn't. I tried not to have the baby on the back seat. It was too early. I was too hurt. The men kept glancing back in horror. We pulled into a hospital. The not father told me he hadn't been a good person to foreigners, but that he was glad to make amends. He got a wheelchair, paid for the cab, and left. Rosie appeared later that night. They tried to stop the labor with drugs that made me feel like I was dying. They were killing us both. They told me she was in distress. They had to get her out right now. Emergency C-section, not enough painkillers. It hurt like hell. They showed me a blue, silent girl baby, then took her away. She's suffering, was all they would tell me. When you can walk, you can see her. I was alone, confused, barely speaking the language. I made myself get up, one leg off the bed, other leg. I was in the worst pain of my life. My legs were elephantine. Bent double, I hauled myself forward, dripping blood through the thin, backless gown. No one helped. I dragged myself down the corridor. I had to get to Rosie. I found her in intensive care attached to machines. They wouldn't let me touch her. Told me to wait. I pushed the nurse aside and launched myself towards my baby. I was distraught. Then I collapsed. My blood pressure. A clot. Blackness. Rosie was the last thing I remember saying. I looked over at my sleeping son. Rosie was fiddling with her hair, shadowing me, always shadowing me. My world had just caved in. The phone had rung. The police. "He's out of jail," was the gist of it. I'd been pressured into giving evidence against him, strong-armed into pressing charges. As usual, my children and my right to care for them were used as leverage to get me to do what the system wanted me to do, which, to be frank, mostly appeared to go hang myself from the nearest light fitting, or at least lose what was left of my mind and self-respect. Process over people. Time and time again. Fuck, fuck, fuck. "What's wrong, Mom?" "Nothing. It's fine, darling." The phone rang again. "How are you, Dee?" said Mr. Charming's voice. "I see you and kids soon. We go nice restaurant." I let him talk. Fuck. We'd had over a year back home. My home. A house in the beginnings of a life. I heard a howl come from somewhere inside me. Somewhere so distant it did not sound like me. My next clear memory is official people taking the kids in a separate car while cops take me to court. The Hague Convention. Simple, context-free, utterly implacable. Did you, or did you not, take the children away from their habitual residence without permission of their father? He was hitting me, beating me up, raping me. This court is not concerned with the availability of justice. Did you or did you not? There was muttering about a further court date. Children to stay with me in the interim. I remember the waiting room my children were sitting in. I remember the woman's disapproval, her lack of empathy. She told me she would see me in a few days' time at my house. Time. I had to buy time. I had all of our passports. I could be back in his country within a day, back to him, with them. At least then I could protect them. I couldn't do that from jail. Money blinds everyone. No one denies he hit me, not even him. He says he's changed. I don't believe him. Other people do. Important people, like judges and social services. My opinion just doesn't seem to matter much. The punches and the kickings, the premature birth, the rapes and STDs, the financial abuse. Suck my cock and I'll buy baby milk. Be nice, Detroit, and I'll buy them shoes. My body, not my own, not worth a damn to anyone but me. I ran a reasonably democratic ship in those days. I summoned my troops, got them to stand to attention. Rosie was hopping from leg to leg. Overjoyed, she was finally being let in on the big secret. Her hair never seemed to stay neat. Her clothes refused to stay tucked. Knees were scuffed from playtime recklessness. She was like a small, squishy puppy. And she was mine as I was hers. My second in command as she saw it. Dear Pete was busy holding her hand in awe of his bigger, bouncier sister. Okay, crew, we have a situation. I need to ask you what you would like to do. Stay with you, Ma. Yeah, stay with you. The only way to do that is to go back to Daddy. Rosie finally got the picture. Put her arms around me. We all cried. I told them I'd try and get away with them again. Promised I would try and make it as safe as I could. Just stick together. A tribe. A crew. My little soldiers. Okay, let's get packed. Don't forget Fuzzy Bear. No, the hamster can't come, Rosie. I called a friend who assured me running to Europe would not be sensible. My friend was a drunk, a kind, sweet drunk. Men had beaten her, used her. She'd lost custody of her daughter to her foreign-born husband and not seen her for years. She clutched my arm, fingers digging in. He will kill you, Detroit. Maybe. She clutched my arm harder. He's going to at least beat you up real bad. I shrugged. Can you take a hamster? He is very cute. We had a long flight ahead. He had gone back to his country, his family. It was going to be much easier to abuse me there. This was not a place where domestic crime went punished. Women were only valued for their fuckability, their youth. Over 25 and a woman was not fit for purpose. I was way past 25. Plus, I was shiningly white. Usually a huge plus, an unfair benefit. Not so much there. Losing racial privilege for that amount of time is an experience. I was quietened immediately. I became less loud, less assured, more careful. I married the man. I ended up being married to a culture that I was totally enfeebled by, that I would never be accepted into. The culture of the country allowed him and his fists free rein. Even the law did. How helpless I was out there. How uncomprehending of the magnitude of that decision. I barely spoke the language to start with. I was utterly dependent on him. Framing things to small people just requires spin, advertising. Hey, shall we go do some exploring when we get there? The taxi driver asked where we were going. To visit the kid's family, just a 2-week vacation. Mr. Charming had happily sent money to pay for the flights. He was going to be waiting at the other end for us, with the car. I started to talk about how much fun flying was, telling the kids stories of when I had visited before, historical figures, exciting things to do. Spin it, Detroit. Happy, smiling kids, let's just get there. I suspect people thought us odd. Getting Rosie from A to B required her consent. She would otherwise drop to the floor screaming, jerking, unmovable. Once she decided to do this, there was no consoling her. Either you waited for her storm to calm or picked her up kicking and biting. We're walking down the line, I sang. We're walking down the line, walking down the line, and my feet are flying. Think about my troubled mind. Rosie sang along. She loved to sing. Pete had a koala backpack on with a surreptitious leash. He toddled on, enjoying his freedom, attached to his ma, looking back and grinning. We were together, a crew. Plane takes off, plane lands, tourist visas accepted. The kids stared open-mouthed. "That girl there looks just like me," Rosie announced. She was right. Her doppelganger zoomed past. High cheekbones, beautiful mid-brown skin, almond eyes, long dark hair. "Make it work," I told myself. "Make it as positive as you can for them." "Wow, great!" "He's gonna kill you, Detroit, or at least beat you up real bad." "Fabulous, yes, come on, crew, let's find Daddy." Faces fell. "It's gonna be fine. Daddy wants us here." Rosie looked hard at me, frowned. Daddy walked round the corner, smelling expensive in nice clothes, looking fit and handsome. I shrank. I felt like running screaming, "Help me, help me." I smiled, forced myself to kiss him on the cheek. My skin crawled. My stomach howled, "Danger, danger." He scooped up Pete, squeezed a scowling Rosie, and took his family home. Mr. Charming had won the war, and I was utterly lost. The children were pushing alien-looking food around plates. Rosie suddenly screamed, "Fuzzy bear! Fuzzy, fuck! How could I do it, lose track of Rosie's lifeline? Fuzzy was her absolute anchor. Now he was gone. The plane, we decided. He'd been left on the plane. Probably was off exploring deepest, darkest Peru. I span frantic tales of what Fuzzy was doing. I plotted a new friend's arrival. Keep her calm. Please, please, stay calm. Noise meant Mr. Charming would get upset, and I had to stop him from exploding. Babies crying, screaming children were considered my fault, and it was expected that I did not allow any disturbance from those children. Rosie made that difficult. Pete was not looking hopeful. Cold fermented milk drink, rice, strange sauce-covered meat. He was doing his best to eat some of it. Pete was not allowed to be difficult. He just knew not to. Instinctively cut me a break and heroically pushed forkfuls of strange food into his mouth. Rosie was, even then, given all the leeway. All my attention was on her. And now on Mr. C. He reached across and grabbed my neck as I leant over to help Rosie. An onlooker might have assumed affection. I tried not to flinch. The evening was wearing on. I was desperate for sleep. "Are you going to be nice later?" he asked. He was going to enjoy his victory. Waiting for the fist, the push, the kick, the dick is worse than it happening. Get it over with. Survive it. He will rest and go to work. You get to live for the 12 hours he is gone. I knew I would pay for him going to jail, for leaving him, taking the kids. At the time, I had no idea just how much. I put two tired children into a single bed, said a quick prayer, kissed them, and went to the living room. Strip wood floors, floor-to-ceiling windows, city view. I stood there, waiting.
I now call this extraordinary woman my sister. She has helped me understand the on-the-ground suffering of women and children caught up in the Hague Convention and its total lack of compassion for mothers, or indeed for the children it's supposed to protect. It's due to Detroit that I asked Philia if they would consider amplifying the voices of Hague victims like her. They not only said yes, they've committed to a long-term project working with and through the International Feminist Sisterhood, with lawyers, academics, domestic violence and children's rights experts, and, most importantly, with women whose lives have been turned upside down by the state-sponsored abuse meted out by the Hague Convention. This is the first in a series of podcasts from the Hague Mothers Project. Please share it and help us raise awareness. If you have experiences or expertise to contribute, please get in touch with us at Filia. And if you can, come to the Hague Mothers session at the Filia conference in Cardiff in October. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Detroit for sharing her story. And heartfelt thanks to all the Hague mothers who are generously contributing their time and energy to this campaign. We'll be hearing from many of them in the weeks to come.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. We are incredibly grateful to all the women who donate their time and their efforts to create this podcast. That includes our guests, our interviewers, and our editors. You can find us on your favorite listening platforms like Apple, Stitcher, and Spotify. Just search for Filia Podcast. Please help us reach even more women. You can do that by subscribing to our show, by sharing this podcast with your friends, with your family, and with your coworkers, or by leaving us a positive rating and review. Filia organizes the largest annual grassroots feminist conference in the UK. We would love to see you there. You can support our work by joining the Friends of Filia scheme, by giving a solidarity ticket so that even more women can join our conference, and by subscribing to our newsletter. Please take a look around our website, filia.org.uk, to find out more. Together, women make magic happen, and we can't wait to be in touch with you.